Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. You're listening to WESU Middletown. I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of For Women Over 40. I'm so glad you could join us today. We're talking with writing coaches and writers Marion Roach Smith and Laura Freeman Williams about creative writing for women over 40, how to find your voice. Laura is a freelance writer, author of The Wilderness of Motherhood, and currently authoring a blog to book, The Wilderness of Breast Cancer, WordPress.com, about her current breast cancer diagnosis and journey. She coaches women writers, helping them to find their focus for work and their life energies, particularly in the transition times between jobs, relationships, or changes in health status. Recently being diagnosed with breast cancer has only sharpened that focus and increased her sense of urgency to help women find their voices, their visions, their power, to create career satisfaction, rich relationships, personal fulfillment, and spiritual connection. She lives in Andover, Mass. With her husband and 9-year-old son. She is a self-described compulsive writer, an enthusiastic dancer, dabbles in drawing and watercolor, and tries to get out into nature every day for a walk with her dog. Marion Roach Smith began her writing career at the New York Times and has since published 4 mass market books, including The Memoir Project, a thoroughly non-standardized text for writing, and Life. Her personal essays have aired on NPR's All Things Considered. Her first love is teaching memoir, which she does on various platforms, including online at her popular blog, MarionRoach.com. So, welcome.
Lovely to be here.
Laura?
Thank you, yes.
Lovely to hear both of you. So, Laura, tell me a little bit about your life's journey. Just tell me what led up to your writing.
Well, I've been a writer since I was 10, and it was a way for me to process the world. And when I say I'm a compulsive writer, it's in my bones. I have to write, and I'm delighted to hear that Marion is a memoirist as well, because much of what I've wanted to share was my own story, and I did quite a bit of that in the Wilderness of Motherhood book.
And Marion, tell me a little bit about your life's journey and what led you to both teach and write.
Well, both of my parents were writers. My sister's a writer, and I'm married to a newspaper editor, so I don't think I had a whole lot of choice in the matter. But I started my writing career at the New York Times by publishing a piece in the New York Times Magazine when I was 26. It was the first-person account about Alzheimer's disease. Actually, it was the first time Alzheimer's disease was even written about in the popular press, which seems extraordinary considering we all know what it is now. But this was 1983, and the New York Times Magazine took a big chance on me. My mother was 49 when she got sick, and in my family, when there's something going on, we write about it. So I did, and it was an extraordinary experience that helped bring Alzheimer's to the public attention. And since then, I've just been writing.
And the allure of writing, especially for helping women write for themselves, tell me a little bit about what that means to you and why you feel so passionate about helping women.
One of the things about stories is they are ancient, and we have always, as human beings, inspired and taught and also empowered our people by the stories we allow them to tell and invite them to tell. And women, in particular, need to be empowered to share their stories. You look in modern movies, especially in the United States, and a lot of the stories are men's stories. War, it's destruction, it's power. And what I find in women's stories is that there's also this tremendous wisdom that we need to hear for healing, for learning to connect with one another, and to find our authentic selves. So it's one of the reasons I'm so passionate about women in particular getting their stories out of themselves and into the culture.
Marion?
Yeah, for me, getting people to their stories, and I agree very much. For me, it's about, I honestly know that I don't know what I feel about anything until I write it down. And so that includes my husband, my daughter, my dog, and pretty much anything. It's very easy to say, oh, I love my husband, he's so great, but you learn nothing there. So if I sit down and explore that, chances are that I'll hit on some kind of universal or the appeal of the reader. But even more to the point, I will hit on some kind of understanding for me. And that's where writing begins, is in the depth of understanding that we are emboldened, allowed, encouraged when we sit down and actually spend more than a few seconds thinking about what we really think about something. So it's my job as a writing teacher, coach, and mentor to connect people to that great wonder that is discovery.
We've spoken about this many times before. There's certainly a movement toward helping women find their voice in midlife, helping women over 40 find their creativity, helping them find their truth. And I think this era is ripe with the possibilities for not only people to teach, but to write, to find forms of expression that help create and foster a new life after midlife. Can either of you address that for me?
I think that, first of all, we're smarter now. So there's this great wealth of information that's there. It would be a shame not to tap into it. I feel pretty strongly that this is a particular time of life unto itself, not as highly regarded as it should. We speak so much about what we lose. I feel I've gained so much in the last 20 years. I will be 60 in April, and I'm happy to be smarter than I was 20 years ago. What about you?
Sima, you'd asked me about what in my life had inspired me to write, and I came from a background with a single-parent schizophrenic mother, and I learned very early on to try to be nice and also to try to look normal, and for me, I hoped to look pretty. And the morning I woke up on my 40th birthday, I was like, wow, I am not going to get any closer to looking like I'm 25 ever again. Like, 25 is gone and no one will ever think I am again. And I'm like, I'm really tired of being nice just to make other people comfortable. And with those two realizations on my birthday morning, I began a tremendous shift in the last 6 years, I'm 46, toward being authentic. And also feeling very unburdened because I'm like, I can just be in my body and I don't have to try to make it anything more than what it is. And with breast cancer diagnosis, I'm on a new level of that, which is, you know, we get older and our bodies begin to decline in ways we might not have anticipated or planned. It sends me deeper into my true self and my true voice and gives an urgency to finding that in my writing as well as helping other women to do so.
Talk to me a little bit about your helping other women over 40. Tell me what that looks like for you.
Sure. When I was a teenager, I was in sort of a fundamentalist religious circle. And at that time, what I learned was that women were second-class citizens and needed to defer all of their thoughts and feelings to the men and let them lead. And while I moved away from that in my early 20s, it's really taken me until my 40s to begin to realize the amazing wealth of wisdom and compassion and power and support that women in particular hold and share with one another. And while I certainly do work with men and don't have a problem with it, I am amazed as I go deeper and deeper into what women work with and work through, just how incredible we are. You know, I grew up with this stereotype that women in business are catty and undermining. And what I've found is I keep finding women who want to encourage other women and support them and be compassionate. And I just find them fun and inspiring. Marianne, what about you?
Well, I think that those are all absolutely fun and inspiring are terrific words for women over 40. For me, I work as a memoir teacher, so I teach in person all over the place, in upstate New York particularly, but I also travel, and I teach online so that I speak with people all the time via Skype all over the world to get in touch with their stories. So, for instance, a book was published this week that I'm very, very proud of that's featured on my website right now, published by a woman who had done caregiving for both parents, both tragic, horrible illnesses and deaths, and she has written arguably the funniest book on caregiving that's also the most practical, helpful book on caregiving I've read in ages. And she's of a certain age, and she had the courage to bring some humor to her expertise. And I'm so proud to have been able to encourage her and coach her along the way to its publication. So it looks like, to me, what this looks like is listening, first of all, to people and what it is that they are writing about and helping them shape their stories so that it's not about them, but it's about something that it's about something, and they are the illustration of that thing. I redirect memoirists all the time away from thinking it's a diaristic genre to it, that it's their universal genre that needs your illustration of your life to apply to some universal theme. And it's deeply gratifying because people get published and they get it, if that's their goal. And I think that is, we just can't have enough mature women's voices out on the bookshelves.
Other than memoir, what other styles of writing would you promote in the process? Do you encourage women to find their voice in a variety of different genres?
Well, I encourage, I'm a memoir teacher and I'm a memoir writer. I was trained as a journalist. And so for me, if they're writing fiction, I send them to another friend of mine who's a fiction editor. But within memoir, there is everything from the book-length memoir to the op-ed piece for your local paper or a national paper, the radio essay, which I've done lots of for NPR, the blog post, the personal essay. There's so much within memoir that is, too many people think memoir means one book-length piece. It doesn't, of course. So the length and breadth of memoir is inexhaustible. So within memoir, I promote and encourage people to think of many different lengths and breadths of piece.
And Laura, what styles of writing do you promote? Do you encourage women to just find their voice in whatever way possible?
Well, you know, I would echo everything Marion said. In addition, when I'm working with women, I want to find out what is the end goal. Because some women may be very satisfied to write a book for the family. And it's a creative process, and they realize they don't need to make money at it. They just have a story to share with that particular audience. While others may want to earn a living, and others may simply want to have the satisfaction of having a widespread voice, and you don't always get money when your voice is heard. So
yeah.
We start with defining what's the goal, and who is this audience, and why? You know, because sometimes we think, oh, well, I have to earn a living writing, and there may be many other ways to earn a living and still have the satisfaction of writing.
I completely agree with that.
What would be a decision-making process for determining whether or not a woman should become a writer professionally or just find it as a cathartic experience? Marion?
Well, I don't think one rules out the other. There's lots of stuff that I don't send out to the marketplace that I write because I need to figure something out. One of my favorite clients I've ever worked with wrote the story of her 50-year marriage and was able to give it to her husband 6 months before he died. What an astonishing and gracious experience that was for us both, I think. So I agree that it's not always about publication. And as I said, it does not exclude the other. But what the market will bear is not a story that's just about me. What the market will bear is a story that has some universality. If you're very, very famous, if we know what you've done with your life, you can write memoir that is really what we call autobiography. If you're Sonia Sotomayor, we want to read your story because we know what happened to you and we want to watch your small decisions along the way. If you're not, if you're me, who's not famous, your opportunities are endless for writing memoir. But you have to write from one area of your expertise at a time. And some of those should be published and some of those shouldn't. But it depends on really getting a good, solid read of the market. And these days, I would argue, are the best days in the history of the world for writers because there's so many places on which to publish.
I love that little phrase you put in that this would be a way to learn her decision-making process along the way. I love that as a way of explanation for all of the stages that someone's life takes, someone's experience takes, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Laura, what do you think about working alone versus working in a group? You know, there's support group, there are writing groups mm-hmm. for women. Mm-hmm. Do you have a preference?
I like to plan the balance that works for me. And what works for me in a group is dealing with some of the 30,000-foot view questions I have about structuring my time and dealing with my self-sabotaging behaviors or their self-sabotaging behaviors and helping one another to find the systems that work to support my writing process. I also choose feedback mentors or accountability partners who I know can tell me straight what they're hearing when I can say to them, what about this doesn't work for you? And they can say, well, you know, this whole place right here is really, it doesn't flow, I don't understand. And I know that they're going to give me honest and authentic feedback. So I have to have some of that in my life, and then I need some time alone to just focus and let things flow and not have interruptions. And everyone's got their own combination of those things that work best for them.
Yeah.
That's true. Marianne, what are some of the biggest roadblocks to writing that you usually deal with in your clients? And what are some of the pragmatic ways that women can overcome them?
It's a great question. I say this to everybody. I wrote this in my little book on how to write memoir. But the biggest roadblock to people is that you should never share your writing with anybody you depend on for food, sex, or shelter. Because you're only going to get one of two responses, and neither one of them is going to help your work. You have to be hospitable to your talent. And that means not keeping your taxes on your desk, not doing anything else on that desk but writing, even if it means you just have a corner of a desk somewhere that you just keep cosmically clean for your writing. Your subconscious will say, oh, I see, it's time to write. But if your taxes are there, you're going to be done for the day. Not getting bad responses, not getting bad, useless feedback is a huge change to make in your life. Get in a good writing group and get yourself some people who are invested in your success. Huge thing. And the other thing is the voice in our heads. I have so many people in my classes who are recovering either from a Catholic upbringing, a destructive marriage, a variety of things. I shouldn't pick on the Catholic Church, but you wouldn't believe how many people I have in my classes who say that their Catholic education taught them that there's no value in self-discovery. And I disagree completely. So those are the three. And what I do with people always is I encourage them to write immediately. People see the benefit.
Laura, how do you encourage them to get better? And I say that because, you know, there are plenty of people who would write stream of consciousness and not have a sense of rhythm, not have a sense of pyramid writing. How would you structure that so that they would get a sense of how to really lay their thoughts out in a concise fashion?
I look back on my college education, and the thing about that that was most valuable was that I had to write multiple pieces every week and get criticism back on them almost immediately. And what that helped me to develop was a thicker skin where I needed it, which is to realize that my writing is not always going to please everyone, and I need to learn to ask for feedback and then close my mouth and hear what they have to say. Right. So not everybody can go back to college, but there are different ways that we can set ourselves up to get that experience and thicken our skin in the places we need it. We still need to be sensitive to the world and feel what we feel, so we process the information in a creative way. But we also need to say, all right, I need some feedback and I want to get better. So we can do internships. We can, you know, get a job that doesn't pay much, but where we have to write and we get feedback. We can join writers' groups. We can hire an editor on a contract basis and say, I want to work on this piece, give me your feedback, and pay them some money. They're going to be more honest with you if you pay the money and aren't your friend.
You know, listening to both of you today, it brings up a really important point that any pathway to creativity stirs up emotions, and dealing with them or not dealing with them will have a profound impact on the end result. So I'm wondering, in both of your experiences, what do you do with people who are filled with loathing and self-doubt and those tapes that they have from childhood? I'm sure that that must be some fair amount of your work with people, in addition to helping them literally write better. Marianne?
For me, I always try to set people on an adventure tale then, and I tell them, then why don't you write about that? And let's see if we can't get at how you, instead of writing the story of how you've been so held back by everybody, let's flip it on its head and talk about how did you keep that human pilot light lit through such oppressive, repressive lack of encouragement for your creativity. What did you do? It's much like the abuse memoir, because in the abuse memoir, we can only watch so many scenes of abuse, but what we really learn from is when somebody takes on what she was thinking about or what he was thinking about to keep her or his soul alive during the abusive period. So I give them, I'll talk to them about trying to make, you know, like many stories, people, for instance, frequently want to write a revenge tale. revenge tales are never interesting. But if you write me a story about how you tried to get revenge and it came to nothing, now you've got my attention. So it's taking the story and asking them, what is this really about, instead of letting them tell me what their plot is. It's like, what is it? Yeah, that's interesting, but what is it about? And once we know what the about is, the story becomes universal and becomes writable and doesn't just become a poor me tale. And that's what I always talk about. What is this about and what are you arguing? Every piece of nonfiction has to have those two things firmly in mind. The writer has to have those things firmly in mind if she expects to get anywhere.
And I'm guessing that you're also asking that in some fashion people get out of their own way, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And Laura?
One of the key tools I use is looking for the opportunity for humor, because when we can inject humor into these dark, heavy places, suddenly they become an entirely different thing. One of my own personal stories is being in my therapist's office and complaining about how, I was looking through my journals and I had the same issues over and over again. And she says, "What, you want new issues?" and I was like, "Oh, yeah, actually, by dealing with the same crud over and over again, I'm actually getting better at it. Okay, this is not that serious. It's okay, I'm human." It lightened the whole thing for me. And I also just read a story on the internet, and I can't give correct attribution for it, but someone was afraid they'd made a terrible social gaffe, and they went to their therapist, and the therapist said, probably you did. You probably just messed something up. So what,
Yeah,
and,
right.
And just finding some humor. It helps change everything.
And Marion, what kind of pragmatic advice do you give your writers? Do you ask them to write daily, weekly, hourly, and what do you do for yourself?
First of all, I have a very subversive outlook that is very controversial, I know, but I don't believe in writing prompts or writing exercises or assignments at all. I use a phrase called write with intent, which means that if you want to learn how to write a blog post, study the best ones. If you want to learn how to write an op-ed piece for the New York Times, study the best ones. Learn the form. Write with intent, always with a goal. Because I believe that writing prompts and writing exercises are just, for many of my clients and my students, they only have 45 minutes a day in which they can write. And if they spend it on exercises, they're never going to get past that. So for me, personally, it's all about discipline. And so I have a grid up on my wall. My entire life is gridded out. I know it sounds insane, but it's the only way it works, so that I'm not thinking about paying the bills when I'm writing. I pay the bills at 8:30 on Friday morning. It's on the grid. Everybody makes fun of my grid. People will call me and say, "Am I on the grid?" And I don't care anymore, because I've published 4 mass market books. I've written countless magazine articles and essays, and this is the way I do it. It's discipline. It all creativity depends on discipline. And I know that's subversive too, but it really is true.
And Laura, the same question. What do you request or require of your clients and yourself?
Great question. And Marion, I'm with you, with the caveat that if it works for somebody, great. If writing prompts work for them, great. And what I'm always trying to do is find out what works for my client and what's going to work for me. They may be very different things, and someone may only have 45 minutes a day, but their entire schedule may be open, and they have a really strong need to make money. So those things all help to shape the plan. So part of what I always recommend is read what you love, not so much to become an imitator of good writers, but to get that cellular feel for what flows and what works. So reading is a filling your own well experience. Find the length of time that work for you. The Pomodoro technique is like 25 minutes of writing and 5 minutes of break, and then longer breaks every couple of hours. That works for some people, the short and intense spurts. Some people need 4 hours. My husband is a scientist, and he needs a big chunk of time to get into the material, write, and wrap it up. A lot of technicality, footnotes, research. When I'm doing creative writing, the 25 minutes on and the 5 minutes off really work for me.
Before we end, and I am going to ask both of you to leave me with some choice words to leave the listeners with some tips for their writing. Can each of you share with me one very small experience you've had with a particular client who either enlightened you or you enlightened them, or they set the light bulb off, changed your framework? Do either of you have one?
I think I learned something from all of them, and that's said with absolute sincerity. I find that different people paint themselves into different corners, and we do this either through self-doubt or learning or writing dialogue that's too wordy, or by not understanding that details are not, just because something happened doesn't make it interesting, which is probably the fundamental rule of memoir, is just because something happened doesn't make it interesting, which I learned from dealing with lots and lots of clients, to teach people not to just because you remember it, it's got to have a place in the memoir. So for me, I learn every day something else that I can pass along to people, which is why I blog and use in my classes. I always use my students' work. I never go in there with a lecture. I teach from what's in front of me because I learn something new every day. What about you,
Laura?
One of the clients who probably taught me the most was someone for whom I wrote a memoir. I ghost wrote it for him. And in the writing, I realized I was really attached to how his story ended. I wanted it to end well and in a way that I found inspiring, and it didn't. And I had to go deeply into his mind and his world to understand his story, and it was so difficult and draining, and it made me realize that I need to be very careful about the clients for whom I write and the topics I choose, because those people's worlds become my own for a time. And that's what I also pass on to my writers, is you really want to invest your time in this book. Take your time, ask some questions, don't just bite because there's money, because you can't get your time back.
What tip would you like to leave the listeners with today?
I always tell people to read over your head. Don't just read memoir. Read over your head. Read things that make you think. Read the New Yorker every week. Read the Paris Review. Read over your head, and you'll learn to write better every day.
And Laura?
I'm a believer in follow your passion, but also with a caveat. You know, find what you love and go in that direction. But if you're resisting something, make sure to ask yourself why, because there can be gold there, but it can be blocked by a little fear or something that a few tools can help unlock.
We've been talking today to writing coaches and writers Marion Rote Smith and Laura Freeman Williams about creative writing for women over 40, How to Find Your Voice. Laura can be found at LauraFreemanWilliams.com, Marion at Marion, MarionRoach.com. We've had a fascinating time. I feel like we've just scratched the surface. Would you agree?
Yes.
We could definitely keep going. In either case, I thank you, the listener, for joining us. I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40. This is WESU Middletown, 88.1 FM on your dial. And until next time, I hope you take care.